You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Tonight on the Cooligans, we are talking about the North London Derby. Where's Aubameyang? Is he still on the way? Also, we're talking about Yunus Musa and Zlatan Ibrahimovic. What international squad are they going to be playing for?
That's right. Plus, we're talking to Michael Parker. You know him from our international squad. Plus, he played for so many MLS teams. And we ask him what Tata Martino was really like. That and more today on the Cooligans!
Yo, it's me, Dave Vianich here, and I've been hanging out with the Cooligans, having a nice, and I hope you've been having a nice too.
Yeah, baby!
All right, woo, 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 woo. Let's go.
You're taking it old school, yeah.
Bringing the Arsenio Hall, you know. I've watching the sequel to Coming to America. I'm excited about it.
Right. I haven't seen it yet. I got to see it. Our friends are in it. Shouts
Our
to
friends
Andrew
are in
Fowler.
It. It's crazy. How come we're not in it, Alexis? Well,
apparently they thought it was the star power was too much. It's Eddie's first time back in a while. Let him have his moment. You know what I mean?
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Cooligans. My name is Christian Polanco.
That's right. I'm Alexis Guerrero.
All right. We are your favorite stand-up comedians that host the funniest soccer show that has ever lived right here on Fubo Sports Network.
And much like Arteta, when you show up late, we're also the gulliest. Right?
Yo, okay. I don't even care if I don't play. All right.
How much we paying you? Fam, go get the car wrapped in a different glow-in-the-dark color, my G. We don't need you right now.
Oh, man. We're excited about today's show. Obviously, we will be talking about the North London Derby, but we have an incredible guest today. We're going to be joined by Michael Parkhurst. You may remember him of the New England Revolution, of the Columbus Crew, and the captain of Atlanta United.
And the men's national team.
And the men's okay, the resume.
Only played in the World Cup.
Okay, the man has a resume. He is retired now, and now he is he's talking to us, the old man.
He's clearly just has nothing to do, so he agreed to come on our show.
Absolutely thrilled to have Michael Parkhurst on the show. We will be talking to him about a ton of stuff. Let's start with the North London Derby, Alexis.
Christian, what do you think of Tottenham?
I think they're an okay team.
Oh,
you know, they really tried their best.
To say shit.
Wait, is there a thing you're supposed to say? Oh no!
Did you? Damn it! These damn Everton fans won't play along. Look, I will tell you this. I will not lie to you. Okay, when I found out Mikel Arteta told Aubameyang you ain't starting because you late, part of me was like, yo, Aubameyang, shave your head and say you're Lacazette. You know what I mean? I'm like, do whatever it takes. But I mean, I had no confidence whatsoever. I just assumed Tottenham would be, they'd seem to be on like an upswing. So I was like, yo, this is their moment. But bruh, Lamella came in. He showed big, and then he showed you who he really is, slapping mans around.
Yeah,
you
can't
be doing that.
The Rabona was the fraud. The red card was who? That's who we you know, when the coaches, they were who we thought they were.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that was the man they told you to worry about. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? To not worry about. Yo, that's who that man is. The Rabona came out of nowhere. Even Lamella was like, I can't believe I did that.
Yeah, and this is not the first time he's Rabona'd before.
No, he does have that in his locker. He just refuses to not, you know, two-foot people. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's so strange because he's lost, you know, he's not really a starter anymore. He's a super sub if you need a red card, the man, you bring him in, all right? Mm-hmm. He'll get you those
he
cautions.
He understands the game. He's like, I don't want to be here for 90 minutes. Right? Even if you make me a sub, I don't want to run around until the final whistle. I'm going to find my way home. But also, shouts to Martin Odegaard. Man.
Yeah.
He's an Arsenal legend. All you got to do is score against Tottenham. That's it. Build
takes.
A statue.
No, he played great. Arsenal was great. They were undoubtedly the better team. It got close at the end there.
Ooh, it got tight. Harry Kane. But you know what's funny? Normally it's Arsenal that gets these chances and doesn't find a way to like, everyone acts like Arsenal dodged a bullet. To some degree, if you're a Tottenham fan, you got to be looking at this like, yo, Harry Kane couldn't get it done. You know what I mean? Arsenal was like, oh, thank God he hit the post. He almost scored. His fans got to be like, why he hit the post? This is your thing. You're supposedly the best striker in the world.
Also, has Harry Kane ever received a yellow card ever in the history of his career? What was that tackle on Gabriel?
Jumping elbow. The man, where did he even find the top rope on the soccer pitch?
Bro, he's aggressive, dude. And I get you. As a forward, you're trying to, you know, put pressure on center backs here and there, but the dude, not only he does that, he undercuts players that are going up for aerial balls
every single time.
He got real
like boarding school energy, don't he? Don't he? He got that like, my mom said I can win, you know?
just like he just has the energy of like someone who just went to an all boys school for his whole entire education. He doesn't know how to show any sensitivity towards other human beings.
None. He just wants to win at the end of the match. He doesn't care who he kills on the way there because everything's gonna be fine. His mom's gonna write him a letter. That's kind of how I don't know if it's true. I don't know anything about him, but that's how it feels.
Absolutely incredible from Arsenal. I thought they were the better team, and you know, the penalty from Lacazette was the difference. But impressive game overall for the Gunners.
We won, which means we stay in 10th. Nothing happened in the table, but we're inching our way closer.
I wanted to talk about some international soccer news. First, let's mention Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Coming back, going to be playing for Sweden. Got the call up, the young man. To do what?
Chaperone the U18s? What's my man doing at 39 years old?
He'll be out there in his cane, with his cane, knocking in headers. He'll be fine.
Him and that rascal scooter out on that pitch, bro. You aim it right, you're going to see a nice header, bro.
No, that'll be huge. You're going to be playing in the Euros. So that'll be big.
He's named to the squad. I don't know if he's going to get a lot of time.
The other thing I want to mention, we have to talk about Yunus Musa. In U.S. men's national team news. This is wild because the man, Yunus Musa, had the opportunity. He could have played for England, Italy,
Ghana,
or the United States. Yeah. And he was, were not aware, he was born in the United States. He was born
in New York City, baby.
In New York City. Happened to be on New York soil when he was born. He was probably here for.
I believe the term you were looking for there was lucky enough to have been on New York soil.
And I think he was here for a total of 20 minutes. But that is a tried and true New Yorker.
We embrace him. Put him in, bro.
But he chose to play for the U.S., which is huge. A lot of people thought he was going to pick England. He was in U.S. MNT put out a video. They did a promo video. Huge. This is a big, big decision.
Then it was very clearly, you could see that there was very clearly a huge push to get him to sign. So thank you so much for picking the U.S. Clearly, it gives him a better chance to be the striker, you know, over all these other countries. Because I think every other country, he would have been, you know, a little bit further down the list.
Okay. He's more of a midfielder. I don't think he's ever going to be a striker for the U.S.
I said striker, but yeah, I meant midfielder. It gives him a chance to be a starter was the word I was looking for, not striker.
Yes,
but yeah, I think he's clearly highly sought out by the men's national team. Berhalter loves him. Put him in. Let him score. And then he could be like, yo, I got it, my guy. Because he's a real New Yorker.
Bacon, egg, and cheeses for everybody. All right. So before we bring in Parky, I do want to mention this thing. We have I have the hello and welcome patch.
Yeah, the patch is for Daryl Grove.
Yes, RIP Daryl Grove. We mentioned this a couple months ago. We finally received the first round of proceeds that we were able to donate to his family. And we raised $6,500 just from all of you picking up these patches. So thank you so much to everyone. Shout out to On the Volley Apparel for making these and getting it done. And shout out to Daryl's wife and Taylor
and
Rockwell.
Everybody. Go get them. They're still on onthevolleyapparel.com. We still have a couple more. All that money goes to his wife. When we come back, we got Michael Parkhurst. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I just want to break in with a word from one of our sponsors, us and you. And by you, I mean Gully Squad. What an absolutely incredible group of human beings. I've learned so much. It has so enriched my life to have this community of people. You guys are American soccer fans. You guys understand it. You know what we go through. And what better place for you guys to communicate than the Slack channel that we built for Gully Squad. And let me tell you something. I had no idea this many dope people loved American soccer. We have everything from a Rate My Pizza, where I get to roast your pizza, to you guys have pet communications, music. You guys do an MLS pick'em when the season is going. You have a beer, wine, and liquor channel just to learn about different, you know, different things to make you feel a little better at the end of the night. You got a coffee channel, which I learned how to make cold brew from that. I mean, if it wasn't for you guys, what would I be doing? Have a lower heart rate? Maybe. But then I wouldn't have all this energy to do this commercial. So if you guys aren't a member of Gully Squad and you want to join, all you have to do is go to soccercooligans.com/Gully Squad, soccercooligans.com/Gully Squad, or just go to shoutstous.com. Join now. Hi, baby, and we're back on the Cooligans Living Room FC, and Christian, our guest, is here. And what an esteemed guest. I mean, I looked up the list of awards this man has won. We're talking Defender of the Year, MLS Defender of the Year, MLS Rookie of the Year, MLS Fair Play Award winner, MLS Humanitarian of the Year award. He, you know, the other players voted him the You Doing Too Much award. You know, like, calm down. I mean, we're talking All-Star, MLS Cup, Danish Cup, if I'm not mistaken, Men's
Those
National
are delicious
Team.
Too.
World Cup. How much... Well, how big is my man's trophy, Cousin? This dude, if you don't know who we're talking about by now, I mean, this guy is absolutely incredible. We actually got a chance to meet him and talk to him, and the look he gave us is like, why are you in this locker room for All-Star? I mean, it was absolutely incredible. Ladies and gentlemen, and also, by the way, a new professional team owner. I mean, dude's too busy. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Ladies and gentlemen, unless you're driving, put your hands together for the one, the only... He probably played for your favorite team. Michael Parkhurst, everybody!
Mike, what's up, brother?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, dude, absolutely honored. I mean, look, there are, you know, the longer we do this, the more we get to meet and interact with people who are just, I mean, just quite frankly, legends of the game, you know, just living legends that contributed so much to American soccer. And you are one of those people, without a doubt. And I want to start very quickly. Alexis did mention, you know, a team owner now, and you do have some big news. Can you please expound on that?
Yeah, just recently announced. I've been in the talks for a while with USL and the ownership group there in Rhode Island. So now I'm become co-founder of the new Rhode Island USL team, unnamed team as of now, but beginning play in 2023. So super excited for that. Rhode Island's my hometown, so really excited to be a part of that project.
Okay. And you could even, since it's not been named, you could pick from one of the multitude of teams that you've played for, right? They could be like the Rhode Island Revolution or Rhode Island Nordsjælland, which I believe are the Wild Tigers. Not that you need to say wild. No one thinks of domesticated tigers when you say tigers. But, I mean, there's so many of all the teams you played for, right? I mean, we met you when you were playing for Atlanta United. When you look back at your career... which one stands out to you the most? I know that's probably difficult to answer, but which one do you think like, whoa, I actually did that?
That's a tough question. Man, when you say whoa, I can't believe we did that. Winning the Danish league title was a whoa, I can't believe we did that, because it was honestly like a Leicester City type run, what we did in Denmark, being one of the smaller clubs and going against clubs like Copenhagen and Brøndby that spend a lot more money. And that brought us to Champions League. But that was a magical season. But when I look at it in an entirety thing, the project in Atlanta, going there to an expansion team and what that city created and that organization created the 3 years I was there, is remarkable.
Yeah. One of the things that I think you maybe tweeted this out at the beginning of the lockdown, because you had retired. And so the beginning of the 2020 season, you are already a retired player. And I think you had tweeted something like, I wish I wouldn't have retired so I would have been able to not play and still get paid.
You retired too early, no?
Was there any regret in leaving too early?
None, honestly. I'm messing around with that. But then later on in 2020, when I saw what these guys went through and like multiple preseasons and just the chaotic schedule and all the testing, and it was a drag on all of them for sure. And no part of me missed being part of that.
Sure.
I mean, could you imagine? You seem like the type of player who would actually do it. But if they had like the two-a-days, but from Zoom, I'd just film myself doing it once and then just play that. I would never do it. I would have tried to get away with everything if I'm home.
Yeah. Gronkowski said he was doing that, right? Wasn't he? Filming himself, like doing multiple workouts and then sending in the video. Yeah, you looked that up. He said he did that about their off-season workouts, I think.
Okay. That's amazing. Our producers are confirming that. That's great that me and Gronk, same body type, same mind. You know, it's funny that you mentioned that, like, oh, I wish I would have played because you would have got paid for free. I read that when you were, I believe it was at Nordstjernan. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. I don't think I am. Whenever I see the A and the E merged, I think my computer's broken. supposedly you took less money to stay there for one more year, right? There were other teams that were offering more money. What are you doing? You played in MLS in the beginning. What are you doing, dude? Get that guap.
But the allure of Champions League. We had just qualified we hadn't qualified yet. We were in position to win the league. And, you know, I knew that we had a really good team and a shot at winning the league title there in Denmark. And I'm so glad I stayed because that was amazing to actually go out and win it. And then obviously play in Champions League the next year. I mean, not too many Americans can say they played in group stage of Champions League. So, I mean, for sure, that was worth the money.
What are your favorite memories of playing in that group stage of Champions League?
Oh, you mean getting our butts kicked by Chelsea and Juventus?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
What was your favorite part of that?
Seriously. We took 1 point out of six games, and we were in the toughest group, I think. Shakhtar, Chelsea, and Juve. So we took a point against Juventus at home. And I actually was a team of the week for Champions League that week, which is, incredible, crazy. just hearing the Champions League music live, walking out to that is goosebumps.
That's amazing. I didn't even know they played that in the stadium. I thought it was just for us. when you look at that, you mentioned the project in Atlanta, right? I mean, I have a podcast on this television show, so I was very vocal about how I did not think Atlanta would come out for that. You know, they had just been a terrible fan base in almost every other sport. I didn't think it was going to work out well. I had no idea how it was going to be put together. And you guys just stormed when you came on. Those first two seasons were absolutely insane to watch. Not just the fans. The fan base is incredible, and that's basically our second home down in Atlanta. But when you look at sort of being a part of that, what did that feel like, you know, walking out in when you finally got to the Mercedes-Benz and you look around and the place is packed? Like, it had to be Champions League the last time you saw something like that.
Yeah, it was insane, honestly. I mean, it's tough to describe because, you know, when I started in 2005, I mean, some of the MLS stadiums that we were playing in, you guys would know, like Arrowhead Stadium and MetLife and, you know, even the Revolution Stadium, to be honest, and some of the others, you know, you're looking around and there's a few thousand in a 70,000 seat stadium. And it's just not an awesome atmosphere. And then I finish up my career in the same league playing in a stadium where if we're playing on a Wednesday night, there's 45,000 people there and they're standing the whole time and they're loud and, you know, into the game. It's just crazy. It's remarkable how far MLS has come so quick.
Yeah, it I think it's amazing being the players, the especially the veteran players that got to experience both, you know, that got to experience the lowest low and the highest high. It's like there has to be something like when you're interacting with younger players, you have to come off as like, you know, back in my day, you sound like
you don't know how good you got it, young blood.
For sure. You hate to say that, you know. You don't know how lucky you have at all this stuff. You such a sound like a, you know, grumpy old guy.
Yeah, you're like, I'm still in my 30s. This is weird. Why do I sound like this?
Why am I pulling my pants up so far?
It really gets to guys when they tell them, hey, there are still guys currently playing. Like Wando probably is one of them that started by making like 15 grand a year, which is insane with no health insurance. Well, that actually gets the guys.
I mean, well, also Wando's indestructible. He doesn't even need health insurance.
Yeah. Like, every time they go to inject him, the needle breaks.
He's like, Obamacare, no thank you, I'll be fine. We have to talk about And I know you probably hate talking about this all the time, but I don't think we've spoken about this with any players we've had on the show. You played for the New England Revolution. The New England Revolution, for lack of a better comparison, you know, been called like the Buffalo Bills of MLS because of in 2005, 6 and 7 made it to 3 straight MLS Cup finals, but unfortunately did not claim a victory in either of the 3. As one of the players who played on that squad, I know it was, you know, that MLS Cup final with Atlanta, I'm sure had a little bit of like, there's no way I'm losing this.
Okay? Well, he played the whole one with his like eyes covered mostly. You know? He's like, not again.
But the playing on a team like that, a great team, especially in that era. But to come up short like that 3 times in a row, what did that do for you as a player? Just even as a person on your psyche to get so close but not complete the job?
Yeah, that was devastating every time. It was worse and worse, compounded each year, and it was probably even tougher on the older guys, you know, because they were probably saying, "Man, how many more chances are we going to get?" You know, I was just starting out my career. You know, but still, yeah, and you have nightmares about those games for a long, long time. You know, you remember, you know, memories from those games, and, you know, thankfully I got one at the end. If I didn't get one, an MLS Cup, that is, those memories I think would be a little bit more vivid. So thankfully I did get one, but yeah, that was tough. And we didn't really even talk about it that much in the locker room. I don't remember, because we had such a good team. We were just expecting to get back to it the next year. Mm-hmm. We really were.
That's got to be, it's got to, when you look back, you got to think, you know, that you did get that one, because if not, you're like, is it me? You know, like, but you were so early in your career, you were probably like, yo, you adults suck. Like, I'm going to have a long career. You guys need to get your shit straight, dude.
Yeah. And then I lost one with Columbus, and then I start looking in the mirror like, maybe it isn't.
You start sending apology letters to them like, no, it turns out it was this guy. What was the move? Because in an era where it wasn't wildly common, even though some of those guys from the Revolution certainly did, you got a chance to go play in Europe. What was that move like for you? You know, coming from Rhode Island, you know, if some people seem to think it looks a little European, you know, maybe it's a little different when you get there. What was that like? What was that transfer like? How did you find out that it was going to potentially happen? Or was that a goal of yours from the off the rip?
Yeah, it was a goal of mine. Things were just changing in New England. You know, the time had come and gone. The organization was just not in a great spot and going the wrong way. And I wanted to go try something new. I was up for a new challenge. And I was thinking I was 25 at the time, or 24, turning 25. And I thought, man, if I sign another 4-year contract, that's it. I finished my career in MLS, which would have been fine. But I felt like it would have been coasting a little bit. And I wanted to challenge myself. I wanted to see if I could make it over in Europe. And, you know, honestly, I was hoping to go to a bigger league, a better club at the time. But it was difficult for a young American. You know, MLS is slowly garnering that respect. But back then, it wasn't to be found. So, you know, I had to go to a small team in Denmark. But it was an awesome move. I lived in Copenhagen for 4 years. Both my kids were born there. I loved the experience. And our team was not too shabby once after the first couple of years.
Yeah, I'm always fascinated by the not only those American players transferring over to Europe, but we hear some like horror stories, and not even necessarily with just like playing, just either living there or like either not knowing the language or just the straight up disrespect of the American player, right? They're just like, they just can't comprehend, like, how do you have the accent and actually know how to, you know, win a 50-50 challenge?
This got to be a yellow card. You heard how he speaks? Yeah.
how was that? Were those some of the challenges? Did just earning the respect of your teammates and just players in the league?
Yeah, I think fortunately I went to Denmark. I think the Danish people in general are super friendly. They are just really nice people, and they all speak fantastic English, so that really wasn't a problem. Of course, they're speaking Danish in the locker room to each other, and so you feel, you know, a little bit of an outcast in the beginning, but they were really cool about speaking English, and eventually as the team grew and got more foreign, eventually all the meetings were in English just because it was just – it was more productive and faster. The Danish guys didn't care. You know, their English was so good. But I could see what you're saying about guys living in Europe and going to like small towns. I mean, us as Americans, you know, you can't imagine going to a city where legit all there is a grocery store. And there's just nothing. There's no entertainment. There's no like bars and restaurants and malls and, you know, all these things. It's literally just basics. Within distance. And thankfully I was in Copenhagen, so, you know, very modern city, but there were definitely guys playing in Denmark, Americans, Chris Rolfe, you know, that just were in small little towns. And that would be really challenging.
I can't imagine. I mean, you seem like you have a really good demeanor. Like if I'm in a locker room and everyone's speaking like, you know, Danish, I'd be like, which one am I, Flurgen? You know, what are you saying about me? You know, am I on the Flurgen? You think I don't know what that means, my dude?
That also makes me think about like Atlanta United and how the
everyone's like, speaking coach, Spanish.
Everyone's speaking Spanish, room. Right? Thought that you know what was now you had to you were obviously in America. And now you're like, all right, well, I gotta learn the language if I.
You're walking around with mate just to get along with everyone.
Man, the crap I would have gotten if I was drinking mate from the other Americans in the locker room.
I'm sure.
Yeah, but you're right. I mean, we were the foreigners, honestly, within that locker room. It was on us to adapt to the South American style, both on the field, off the field, in the locker room with the coaching staff. Everything was in Spanish. All the meetings, everything out on the field, you know, we were the ones getting translated for, and just the environment within the locker room, was very Latin. And it probably led to our success early on because we, as English speaking players, not just Americans, but, you know, some English guys and, you know, other countries, but, it was easier for us to adapt to them, right? We were in our home country and, you know, for those guys, it was an easier transition for them coming into a locker room where, hey, shoot, I don't have to learn English. You know, I've got like half the locker room speaking Spanish. This is kind of cool, you know? So I think in a certain way, it helped us have success quicker because those guys felt more comfortable.
Both coaches are no longer in the league. So maybe you could talk about it. Maybe you can't. But there was all these rumors that some of the South American players wanted to leave when Frank de Boer came in because he changed the atmosphere. And the atmosphere was thought that was like very South American. And look, we're both Latino, so we get it. When we say the meeting starts at noon, get here at least by one, right? Vibes is more important than the time. Is there some truth to that?
Oh, you're so right. It's crazy. I mean, it was like the first week of training and like, you know, it's like 10 o'clock and, you know, all the English guys were out there like 9:50, you know, like ready to go. It's like 9:59 and like none of them are out there. And we're like, guys, what the heck is going on? Tata comes strolling out at like 10:01. Here comes Vijalba at like 10:03. And we're looking at each other like, what the heck? It's just different, man. It is. But then you get Frank in there and it goes back to like the European way. Yeah. And, you know, it's so different. And it was now their time to adapt to a different, and it was tough for them because they were so used to Tata and how things had been.
Yeah,
but they won, so you kind of forgive it, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, for sure. Without a doubt, the, you know, who knows exactly, you know, specifically what contributed to the success, but the chemistry, the I mean, the entertainment. Look, we're NYCFC fans. We watch, especially those matches between Atlanta United and NYCFC. There was I wouldn't call it a rivalry per se, but there was something this maybe Tata and Vieira. Tactical battle that where nobody wanted to get like outdone in those matches.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's because NYC under Vieira played some of the best soccer in the league. And, you know, we always wanted to play out of the back. They wanted to play out of the back. And it was like, you know, just whose style is going to take over, who's going to will their way to dominate the game. You know, Atlanta United those first 2 years, we didn't just want to win. We wanted to go out there and dominate teams. We wanted to like crush them and, you know, bury them. And New York City was tough for us to do that because, you know, they were so confident playing out of the back and breaking our press. And David Villa is one of the best signings in MLS history. That guy was so good. So those were fun games. I do not miss playing at Yankee Stadium, that's for sure.
if only Nice would have tried to sign Tata Martino midseason instead of us. And speaking of your time with American soccer, you actually got a chance to play for the men's national team. I believe your first call up was in 2007. What led to that? Did you know it was coming? Because obviously you were, you know, very beloved. I don't know if that's the right word, but you were looked at as a very good player even very early on in your career. How did that come about? And what was that like when you got that call?
Yeah, out of the blue, actually. You know, the woman who was in charge of administrative things for the national team had just called me and said that I'd be on the preliminary roster for the upcoming Gold Cup. And I was shocked. I wasn't expecting it. I don't even know if I knew there was a Gold Cup going on that summer. that was awesome. It was obviously fantastic to play for the national team and get that first call up and, put that jersey on. So that's a memory for sure.
I want to just address this very quickly. So we have a bunch of questions from fans. We have soccer teams have supporters group. We have our own supporters group that they're called the Gully Squad. And we had a question from a diehard. This is from Nick Sint. He had asked about your U.S. men's national team career.
He's clearly a fan because it's such a specific question to you.
He said, Michael Parkhurst jerseys for the U.S. men's national team, and he linked two pictures here that you can't see, but he says they always seem to be two sizes too big. I've seen a couple of these pictures of him throughout the year, so I'm curious if that's your style or preference, or is the kit man was just messing with you. Is this a real thing? Because I'm looking at these photos and they're much bigger on you. Yeah, they look like
you're wearing my shirt.
Is that a thing?
I think it's twofold. I think one was, I think back in the day, times have changed big time, right?
Okay.
And so I think it was a little bit more hip to wear stuff that was a little looser. So that was probably one thing. But then the second was my whole career, I wore a shoulder brace underneath my jersey because I dislocated my shoulder in college. And then did it again with the Revs. And so I had shoulder issues my whole career. So I always wore a shoulder brace and I didn't love like it showing or people knowing or anything like that. And plus it was just a little bulky underneath. So I had to have a little bit bigger of a jersey as well.
You do low key look like you're wearing a bulletproof vest. And I'm like, what is this? Is he worried about something? At least that explains it. You can see the bump. Yeah, for sure.
Now I think about that. Yeah, because I remember you had a shoulder injury in Atlanta as well.
Yeah.
So it's, I didn't realize it was that consistent and stuff like that. But the
fans are noticing, which is kind of odd, isn't it? Yeah. They're even worrying about your shirt sizes.
It is. I'm worried about my style. Yeah.
Because I thought, you know, Michael Parkhurst was just wearing like baggy, like Carl Kanai jeans and everything or whatever. Like that was just your stilo. All right.
Yeah. What's with the Wallabies and the Tims you wore out on the field, Michael Parkhurst? I wanted to ask, when you play for the men's national team, it's got to be different. Then, compare it to your time in Europe, because I think the fans always assume that like the European clubs, like they're more regimented and they're more structured than MLS clubs. And MLS clubs are like a bit more bedlam when it comes to training and stuff. And I know that's not necessarily the case anymore, but I think that's kind of how people perceive it. What was your time with the men's national team like? And do you think that helped you at all in your career?
Oh, definitely. To your first point, I think it's really club to club, coach to coach, as far as organization and training and professionalism and that type of stuff. The biggest thing about playing with the national team is just training every day with the best players in the country. For confidence, but two, obviously you're just getting better quicker. You're seeing things out on the training field and you're going up against guys that are testing you every day. But the coaching staff is much different. it was from Bob to Jurgen. I heard about trainings with Bruce. You know, it's just so different. And some coaches that I had, you know, take Greg to Jurgen, Berhalter, that is. Berhalter is just so tactically in tuned, and everything has to be regimented this way and that way and how on the field. And Jurgen was more like, all right, guys, let's go out there and play. And, you know, it's just different.
It's like, am I in goal? He didn't say anything, you know? Wait, you're from Rhode Island. So you were probably familiar with Bob Bradley. And we've joked about this with players before who play for Bob Bradley now or in the past. But, you know, I'm born and raised in Newark, New Jersey. When we talk, even when we're happy, it sounds intense. It sounds like we're mad at the person. You're like, why are you yelling? I'm not yelling. I'm talking. Now I'm yelling. You know, it's like, because you brought up yelling. Like, were you familiar when you played for Bob Bradley? Like, was that just old hat for you having grown up in Providence?
A little bit, but he was intense. I mean, and I was at a young age, I was playing for a head coach in Stevie Nicol and Paul Mariner, that these guys were just out there having fun. Yeah. I mean, talk about the ultimate players coaches. These guys were legends. I mean, we worked hard on the field, and then it was like, why aren't you guys going to have a beer? Why aren't you going to have a good time?
That's
like,
that Liverpool energy that
came. Oh yeah. I mean, we did preseasons in Costa Rica and Cancun. I mean, we showed up getting a bracelet for food and drinks in Cancun.
Partying with Ted Cruz.
Yeah.
And it was like, hey, where are the team meals? And they were like, it's open bar and food. Just eat what you want. You know, so going from that to Bob Bradley with national team camp, I thought, man, this guy is like, whew, he's intense.
As you go to squeeze the ketchup on your french fries, he just peers up behind you. He's like, you're going to put ketchup on your fries? Is that what you're going to do?
You're having fries?
Yeah. You know, oh, okay. You know why they call them that? It's because they're fried. You sure you want to do that? You're like, exactly. All right, maybe I don't. Maybe I don't. Steamed broccoli for me and my friends, I guess. You know?
Yeah, and I didn't know any better as a pro, but, you know, looking back, you know, yeah, you probably more tend to want to play for a coach like Bob and Greg, guys that are more regimented and care about all the details than the coaches that are kind of just like, hey, go out there and do your thing.
Yeah. I mean, it makes me think, like, I mean, no disrespect to Stevie Nicol, a legend in the game, but like, could a coach with the coaching style of Stevie Nicol coach in MLS now with all
yes, if he had 11 Vijalbas.
That's a really good question, though. And it's a tough one because there's definitely something to be said for a motivated player, a confident player, and a group that's in a good vibe and having fun and enjoying life and soccer, right? I mean, Ted Lasso obviously is an amazing show, first of all, and fictional, but some of it is, there's truth to some of it as far as motivating players. And Stevie was just motivational in that, like, hey, you want to work hard for this guy because he's such a good guy and he lets us enjoy ourselves. So there's definitely something to be said for that. But I will also say that in 4 years, we never watched video or had a weightlifting session. So
you actually think, like, in the scene in Ted Lasso where he's bringing out cake and music and dancing after a loss, you actually think that would inspire players to do better?
No, that's probably a bit far stretched. Maybe the cake, but not the music.
just cry over the cake. It'll be fine. Yeah.
But that definitely was not far off from Stevie. You know, he was upset for a few minutes, and I was like, all right, let's find a bar.
Nice.
Yeah. So we have some questions from fans from Gully Squad, our supporters group. Some really great questions. And I want to start with this one. This is just a comment. This is from Lura McCoy. He just says, no questions, but it is really awesome to see you continue to be hype about Atlanta United, which is great to see. But we had a good question from Justin Friedberg. He asked, who's the best center back partner that you've had in your MLS career?
Ooh, really good question. I'd say that
it's hard to answer without hurting people's feelings.
What are some of the names coming through your mind right now? Because obviously you play with so many great partnerships.
I think there's three coming to mind, excluding national team. I think there's three coming to mind. Gonzalez Perez for Atlanta United. And then, oh God, I'm blanking on his name right now, but I played with him in Columbus, and then he went to Italy and came back and went to LA. Giancarlo Gonzalez.
Okay.
Is his name. Costa Rican. He was very good. I really enjoyed playing with him. But I think the most talented of all of them is probably Miles Robinson.
Okay. What does it mean for, because people talk about center back partnerships, and I feel like fans don't really understand. From what I understand being an Arsenal fan is that sometimes it doesn't work. And I think one of the reasons why is they always talk about, like, you can't have one that roams and both the can roam, one has to stay home. What is that conversation like? What's the communication like during a match where you're sort of guiding and directing that? And, you know, how would you view yourself as a center back? You know, were you a bit more of a risk taker, or do you think you were the one who had to hold down the fort?
Yeah, I was holding down the fort. Gonzalez Perez was the risk taker. He was the guy dribbling out of the back. He was the one going into midfield sometimes.
Yeah, he was the one. He was in front of the other goal. You're like, what are you doing, buddy? You're supposed to be right here.
Exactly. But we complemented each other well. You know, I was obviously a little bit more using my brain. He was the physical force, putting fear into attackers. You know, so playing with somebody like that was important for me, right? I'm not the biggest guy. I'm not going to physically intimidate guys. I don't even try. And I didn't get forward a ton. That was from Stevie Nicol. It was like, hey, do not cross half line.
So that you know who you are.
That kind of stuck with me. So I was definitely not a risk taker. But that partnership's important. Yeah, you need to have a good understanding of the guy next to you and how they like to play and what they like to do in certain situations. It's definitely beneficial.
You say you didn't go forward, but in Europe, you played right back sometimes, right? Yeah, well, almost for half a season, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, for a year and a half, 2 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, probably 2 years. And then even probably my best success with the national team under Jurgen, I was playing outside back. When I was playing outside back, I loved to get forward. That was fun. That was the fun part of playing outside back. A little bit more running, but at least I got to go forward and enjoy that.
I would never go forward because then you have to go back. It's just, this is too much. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that was also one of the things that was fun watching you play. And actually, when we first met you, and this happens, I think for us, you know, we've only really been meeting soccer players for like the last like 4 years. But when we met many of them, we were like, all right, we're like kind of the same height and build. I mean, what, when I hear center back, I don't think Michael Parker's, but when you're actually playing, I'm like, yo, this dude is never in a bad position.
Yeah. I mean, that's it for me, right? I mean, you have to play up to your strengths and you have to take advantage of your strengths. And for me, that was not physical, right? So that was mental for me. So it was reading the game, being ahead of the forward, being in the right spots positionally, being aware, those types of things. Yeah, I had to be smarter than the forward, otherwise I was going to lose.
Okay.
This question is from Thomas Thornton. He said, as a diehard Atlanta United fan, and specifically a fan of Parkey, a lot of us really want to hear the news that he'll be joining the front office side / academy staff of Atlanta United. Any confirmation he can give towards this?
Well, I could say that I'm currently living in Ohio, so it's going to be a little tough, difficult.
All right, kids, gather around the Zoom. Learn how to be a defender.
Yeah. No, I mean, Atlanta United will always hold a special place in my heart, and I want to stay connected with the club in some regard. But no, I'm not going to be coaching full-time or anything like that, or being part of the front office anytime soon.
What about with the Rhode Island team? How do you see yourself getting involved? Because as an owner and as a USL team, you probably have a lot to give, especially some of the younger players that are probably going to be coming through the system.
Yeah, not a ton on the day-to-day, but I definitely want to be involved as far as setting everything up and making sure everything's going to be run properly. The club's going to be in a good position, you know, as far as coach and GM. I want to assist on players and personnel and those types of things. And obviously when I'm in town and could be around players or join things virtually, or, you know, when I'm in town, I'd love to, but not too much on the day to day.
Okay. We got a couple other questions. Let's see if we can get to both of these, but this is from Nick Leishman. He's a New York Red Bulls fan. He asked, why did he and Atlanta United need to be such rude hosts in game one of the 2018 conference finals?
Man, we had a good a good battle against the Red Bulls, man. They were probably one of our biggest rivals, you know, since we just beat up on Orlando and that wasn't much of a rival.
Those were intense matches between
Red Bull. I mean, it was just contrasting styles of play, right? Red Bulls wanted nothing of playing out of the back. They were so physical, so tough to play against their press. And, you know, we were like, all right, no, we're going to play out of the back. I don't care about your press, you know, this and that. So it was just a battle of the wills. And, you know, it was always intense matches. And, we got fortunate in that game. We played probably lights out, best game we probably ever played. And then, I think they made a couple mistakes tactically that helped us out.
Okay. And real quick, the last one, maybe you have a quick one, but Andrew Johnson, a huge Columbus Crew fan, wants to know, what is your best Pippa story from your time at Columbus?
Pippa or Pipa?
Pipa.
Yeah, it's my Pipa. Bad.
It's all good. I forget that he's Argentinian.
Pipa is a legend. I absolutely love Pipa. He is one of the best guys, one of the best teammates I've ever had. And, he was captain when I arrived, and Greg kind of made me captain when I came into the team. And Pipa couldn't have been a nicer guy about it, because obviously he's a proud guy. He's Argentine, you know, he got that blood in him. But we kicked it off from the beginning, have a really good relationship. He's somebody I still stay in contact with, and I'm glad he found a team to come back from that ACL. I knew he didn't want to retire like that. He's such a good dude, but we really enjoyed our time together. I remember one of my first times around him, you know, his English was kind of hit or miss, especially my first year. And we were doing a jersey unveil, and I told him to like get out there, that day, you need to look around and turn and do this and that. And he was like, okay. So we went down there and he did that. And he came back, and I was just dying laughing. And he knew right away, like, I just set him up on something. I think I gained his respect a little bit, because, you know, maybe I underestimated like the Higuain name and maybe his pride and stuff, but we became quick friends.
That's awesome.
All right. We did it again. Another hot Cooligans off the presses.
It's too much. Too hot. You know what I mean?
Michael Parker, thank you so much for joining us, man. Seriously, been an absolute, absolute honor. Is there anything that you want to mention or plug before we sign off?
One project that I've been working with and on is a technology platform called RippleWorks. I'm really excited about it. It's keeping me connected into the game. It's a performance enhancing tool, and we're using it on youth athletes all the way up to professional athletes. And I think it's going to be a really engaging and difference making tool. So RippleWorks.com, or you can check it on my social, MF Parkhurst at Twitter. And the Rhode Island project. Those are the two things I got going on right now, and I'm super pumped about.
Okay. It's cool you made your social motherfucking Parkhurst.
Okay, all right. I like the energy. Right. Okay,
you know, you're bringing that character. You know what I mean?
Amazing. All right, and just a reminder to everybody else: make sure you follow us at Soccer Cooligans on all social platforms. Follow us on Twitch. We're on there as well, doing some fun stuff, gaming and things like that. And follow at Fubo Sports on all socials, and subscribe to the Fubo Sports YouTube channel for full episodes of the show. Okay, Parky. Honored to say that. Hopefully, am I allowed to say that? That's what.
Absolutely.
Okay, cool. Let's get your goal celebration, Jif. If obviously we have to set the scene. I mean, what's the scenario?
This is the World Cup group stage, and you just scored the header against Mexico to get us into the knockout rounds. What is your goal celebration?
I think I'm going to the boards right at the end of the stadium, and I'm standing up on the boards for a second or two until I lose my balance, and giving it to the crowd.
Oh, one of the arms wide open joints, or you're giving one of these?
It's the Joseph Martinez when the flames shoot out celebration.
Exactly. Okay. Without the flames shooting at me, yes.
Yeah, he's never done that again. He's like, okay, I learned my lesson.
I get it, pyro. We know.
Amazing. Michael Parker, Chris, absolutely honored. We're huge fans. Thank you so much for joining us. I know a bunch of, especially Atlanta United fans, will have loved this conversation because we get a lot of love from there as well. So let us just end the show the way we normally do, as is tradition. So for Michael Parkhurst, my name is Christian Polanco.
I'm Alexis Guerreros,
and together, what are we?
The Cooligans!